Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Brantley.
And I'm Connor Orr.
So we still have some meaningful football that's going to be playing on Sunday, and we'll get to the conference championships a little bit later in the show, but let's start with the first head coaching hire of the 2023 calendar year. Frank Reich is going to be the next head coach of the Panthers. Connor, let me just ask you this in the most general, vague terms. What do you expect from a Frank Reich regime in Carolina?
Yeah, I would. So here's sort of my thought process on this. To me, it seemed like the Carolina Panthers really liked Ben Johnson. And when Ben Johnson decided to go back to Detroit, we heard there was some kind of regrouping going on there. And after that took place, you heard about Wilkes, who they really, really liked. And I think you heard a little bit about Frank Reich, too. And so to me, I think Frank Reich gets the edge because you're looking at – there's a bit of recency bias here, but you're looking at, okay – who's winning right now in the NFL? Who's doing a good job? And sure, I could get my McVay guy. So the Zach Taylor and Kyle Shanahan, they're two of the four remaining coaches. But then Nick Sirianni. But then we have Andy Reid. And Andy Reid beat Doug Peterson, who turned the Jaguars around. And his experience, as we first started hearing this 2 years ago, and proven track record of offensive success along with that experience, is that really kind of the golden goose at this point? Because, okay, Doug Peterson helped turn around Jacksonville. Mike McCarthy, say what you will, has won a lot of games in Dallas now, especially over the last 2 years, has had the team as a legitimate contender. Andy Reid's been consistently good. And it, unlike Sean Payton, it's not going to take $25 million a year and 2 first-round draft picks. You know, this is a very reasonable hire. You know the team is going to be at least mid-level competency by next year, and you have something to build on. And I don't know. I think Frank is good. I mean, he's one of the few coaches in NFL history. This would be a good trivia question, Gary, who was fired with a winning record, at least 10 games above 500. I want to say it's him, Brad Childress, Mike Smith of the Atlanta Falcons.
Yep.
I think there are very few, but I think he is one of them.
Yeah, I think overall you don't really hesitate because of what happened in Indianapolis. Things are just going off the rails with that organization, and in a way, Frank Reich was probably fortunate to get out of there when he did. If you go back historically, fun little factoid, everyone can break out their Frank Reich jerseys, Carolina Panthers jerseys from the mid-90s when he was the first quarterback there. And I'm going to throw out this factoid, and I apologize if this is the equivalent of a Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard type of fact I'm going to put out. But the Panthers, every coach in their franchise history, including the two interims, Perry Fuel and Steve Wilks now, are defensive coaches, defensive background guys. They never had a guy with an offensive background be a head coach. So, you know, they had some good years in the mid-aughts. It hasn't quite clicked since then. They had the 15-1 year with Cam. But I think we're both probably a little bit disappointed that Steve Wilks doesn't get this job. I think he did coach his way into it and kind of earned it at this point. But, you know, if you do want to bring someone in to go hand-in-hand with whoever your next quarterback is going to be in that desperate search, it does kind of make some sense to bring in the offensive guy and, you know, just go in what has been a different direction than what the franchise has done historically.
Listen, I don't know if this is going to be a home run from an optics standpoint because, again, I mean, we're in this age of there's a vast discrepancy between, white head coaches and minority head coaches. And, coaches don't really want it to be about race. They want it to be about resume. And Steve Wilks has done a really good job. I mean, he got steamrolled in Arizona in his only 1 year shot at being a head coach. And then he took a barren roster in Carolina and almost made the playoffs. I think it's a little bit of lip service here at this point if the Panthers are saying, okay, well, you did a great job and you proved everything you needed to prove, but we're also going here. So we have that idea in one bucket, but then we have in the other idea, and, you know, Frank Reich was kind of steamrolled too, and he proved that he could win. He proved that he could make the playoffs. I think he was 1-2 in the postseason in Indianapolis with a cavalcade of sort of these veteran guys, 1 year of Philip Rivers, 1 year of some backup that Gary's obsessed with, and 1 year with Carson Wentz. So this is a situation where, you know, again, I don't think both of them are equally trod over and disadvantaged, but Frank Reich, you know, got hosed too. This was a guy who, you know, I mean, shoot, Jim Irsay just decided one day that he was going to hire his best friend off ESPN. And so there's, you know, he deserves another chance too.
The TV tells us important things, so you can understand how you fall into that. The other thing that kind of stuck out to me is, you know, this is a pro Ben McAdoo podcast. There's been a sort of level of revisionist history with him now as everyone looks back and says, oh yeah, maybe Geno Smith should have started over a sort of decrepit Eli Manning at that point in his career. Maybe Ben McAdoo was on to something. Maybe he can recognize quarterback talent. He did a tremendous job this year with a collection of guys who just look. Sam Darnold is probably not a starting quarterback in this league, but he has some tools you can work with. Ben McAdoo kind of maximized that. The thing that was really interesting to me with McAdoo, if you ultimately stuck with the Steve Wilks head coach, Ben McAdoo offensive coordinator pairing there, is, you know, what's the worry every time you hire a defensive coach? It's that, he's going to get an offensive coordinator. If the offensive coordinator is good, that guy's going to get poached, and now you're back to square one with, you know, whatever your quarterback situation might be. I don't know if anyone is ever going to even consider Ben McAdoo as a head coach again, primarily because, you know, he didn't look handsome at that one press conference.
Oh, man, the big suit.
Yeah,
I like the big suit. I always liked the big suit because
the big suit, by the way, came back like 5 years later.
It did. What was the movie that Brad Pitt was in and he was like a jogging addict and he wore the big suit? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No. Sounds amazing, though.
Burn After Reading, maybe. But Brad Pitt had a big suit.
Yeah. Okay.
He had a big suit in there.
He was like a fitness guy.
Yeah, but I think at some point in there, he had to wear a suit, and he was wearing a big suit.
He was wearing a big suit. That is
yes.
True.
Okay. But, yeah, I don't know. I think a lot – this league is so cyclical, right, and it's so weird that, I mean, who knows? After two years in New York, and we'll talk about this a little bit later in the show, but Nathaniel Hackett, their OC, who was just hired today, you know, everyone can conveniently forget about what happened with Russell Wilson. Pete Carroll was a disaster in his first like three head coaching jobs. And so I think, you know, with opportunity, with time, you learn more. I like hiring second chance head coaches, and I know it doesn't seem fair to a lot of people and it doesn't sound fair, but I mean, we all learn by making mistakes. There are very few of us who are as good as someone like Nick Sirianni right away. And Kyle Shanahan, you could make that argument, but Kyle Shanahan grew up with a dad who won two Super Bowls. So, you know, you're kind of getting shown the ropes here. I think the only other way that you can build to this point, I mean, look at the consistency out of someone like Andy Reid or Bill Belichick or some of these guys. It's just, yeah, I mean, year after year, you learn from your mistakes, you learn from your failures. And so I don't know. I like that idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with retreads. Again, I think Vance Joseph is the guy who stands out most to me over the last couple of years, because he was just game management stuff, and it would have been fine in 3 years if they stuck with him. But, you know, there's just no patience for it, and especially when you make a mistake in clock management that anyone who plays Madden would not make. yeah, it's easy to sort of bow a little bit to public pressure at that point. Well, let's go over to the Jets, and, you know, kind of a weird move, moving on from Mike LaFleur, who did a nice job with not the best quarterback options, the way Zach Wilson has sort of progressed so far in his career. But they do kind of land on their feet here, getting Nathaniel Hackett. We can get into the whole background and what it's going to take to sort of reclimate his reputation at this point. But this is, I think, as well as they could have done as far as an OC hire at this point.
Yeah. It still kind of befuddles me a little bit. And it's an easy joke, right? And I tweeted something about it, and I've got the replies like, what's he going to do? Ruin this quarterback too? And it just shows a lack of, and I'm guilty of it too from time to time, sure. I'm sure I would have made the same joke if Pat Shurmur, when he gets the Commander's job, ignoring what he did with Case Keenum. And sure, yeah, okay, fair enough. But Nathaniel Hackett's been a good offensive coordinator in the NFL. He was a really good offensive coordinator in college. Maybe there's a little bit of bias there because I went to Syracuse. He was in that Doug Marrone Syracuse staff that, I mean, they installed like the K-gun and like broke every school record with Ryan Nassib, almost turned Ryan Nassib into a first round pick, which is pretty incredible at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's some people like mocking him like ninth overall to the Jets. I remember that. There was a time and a place, Gary, that happened. I was there for it. He had, I think, Kyle Orton at his best year with Nathaniel Hackett in Buffalo. Like, this isn't a guy who, okay, outside of Aaron Rodgers, has had this murderer's row of quarterbacks. Like, it's been, yes, Aaron Rodgers at the very top, but then, okay, Blake Bortles, Kyle Orton, like Kyle Orton, who had, like, taken a year off, Ryan Nassib, you know, Yeah, like, let's get him in a normal situation here and see what he can do. I mean, it's not just me that's saying this. It's, you know, you and I worked on that story about Nathaniel Hackett last year for our season preview. And, you know, legitimately talented vets, you know, David Bakhtiari, Mercedes Lewis, like guys who have been around good and bad offensive coordinators in their life. And they're like, yeah, we swear by this guy. I mean, he's the best.
Yeah, it's been funny watching people go back after the season and be like, oh, well, you know, his Jaguars offenses were middle of the pack. It's like, yeah, his Jaguars offenses were middle of the pack with a quarterback
who did
not get anywhere near the field for any other team over the course of his career. E.J. Manuel, you could go back and look at Aaron Rodgers before the coaching change. I mean, yeah, that was not a good offense in the late McCarthy years. They needed to reinvent that, and obviously it got back on track there. But this is a solid hire at the very least. Obviously, here a lot of people are going to link Aaron Rodgers to the Jets, which is something that you, by the way, wrote about in isolation before it was clear that Nathaniel Hackett was going to be the Jets offensive coordinator.
Yeah, so, all right. I wrote about this in a couple different ways. When Nathaniel Hackett got the Broncos job, I wrote, and Old Takes Exposed retweeted it handily. But I said that this was going to be a good hire independent of, I don't understand why everybody is like, yeah, he's teams are hiring him just to lure Aaron Rodgers. Do you know what an asinine and crazy decision that would be by anybody? Like, if the Broncos legitimately thought that Aaron Rodgers, one of the spaciest and most mercurial people on Earth, that they were going to be able to somehow ascertain what he was going to do before he did it, there's no way. There's just no way that's possible. And if the Jets are firing Mike LaFleur, who's, mark my words, by the way, in the next three years, he's going to be a head coach. He's going to be a head coach in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So if the Jets are firing a future head coach to bring in another offensive coordinator, they're doing so. They're willing to take the PR hit after the coach was a one and done in Denver. And they're willing to take the risk of, again, they're jumping into this pool where it's like, oh yeah, no, this is the guy that's going to help us lure Aaron Rodgers after he wasn't able to do it in the other place. No, I mean, it's just not realistic. Now that said, do I think Aaron Rodgers and the Jets would be a great fit? Yes, but that's here. I'm putting my hand up in the air. And then do I think Nathaniel Hackett and the Jets would be a great fit? Yes. And I'm putting my hand over here in a completely different space. These can run parallel to each other. They don't have to crisscross and intersect in either way, shape, or form.
Connor's got a good wingspan, too. So those hands were pretty far apart.
What do you think? I'm like,
pretty good.
What's a good wingspan?
You'd be one of those guys, you know, no offense, people would see your height at the combine and be like, I don't know if this is my cornerback. And sure. But then they do your reach and you'd have like, you know, 32-inch arms, and then people would be like, oh, all right, got to rethink this.
When Facebook first started, I my profile picture in whatever 2005, when I was going to college, it was a photo that someone had taken of me from the ground up. And yes. So I arrived on campus, and according to all my new virtual friends, I was like 6'4". And the RA came to our room, and he was like, oh, where's Connor? And I was like, hey. And he was like, oh, my God. He's like, I just thought you were like 6'5". And it's like, nope, 5'8". You know, just height concerns. We're already off on a flying start here. So... back when you could fool people on the internet.
There you go. Let's talk about some on-the-field football teams that are still playing meaningful competitive games. It is Championship Sunday coming up. Let's start with the NFC game, and I will just throw it out as broadly as possible. What do you think, Connor? What are we looking at here?
I'm looking at the 49ers stress testing the Eagles in ways that they haven't been stress tested before. Because here's the thing. I was thinking about, have I said here's the thing a lot today?
I don't think so.
Would you say it was like above average?
No, I hadn't really noticed.
Okay, good. Because sometimes you get into that mode. And like, I wonder if Jenny and I talked about this a lot. My high school football coach said, you understand after everything. And I was like, wow, like, how do you not notice that? And then a couple weeks into Jenny and I's podcast together, there was like 40 comments that like, you say this all the time, stop it. And so you're trying to just kick some of those natural ticks, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But so I was looking at the Eagles' schedule this year. And again, I'm not trying to diminish in any way, shape, or form what they've done. They had a phenomenal season. They have a kick-ass offense, a kick-ass defense. I mean, they went 14-3. But have they played a team this season the caliber of the San Francisco 49ers? I would argue no. So they had Detroit in the season opener, and Detroit wasn't Detroit at that point. Minnesota, the Commanders, the Jaguars, the Cardinals, your Dallas Cowboys without Dak Prescott, Steelers, Texans, Commanders, Colts, Packers, Titans, Giants, Bears, Cowboys, Saints, Giants. So they played, there was the one big game against the Cowboys, right, on Christmas Eve, which they lost 40-34 with Gardner Minshew. Mm-hmm. So that was really, to me, the only opportunity. And this isn't to dismiss the rest of the NFL as not difficult, but that was the only opportunity we had to see the Eagles against a truly upper crust elite top six opponent this year. Is that fair to say?
Yes. I think the Cowboys are up there, but yeah.
No. That's what I'm saying. The Cowboys.
Yeah.
That Cowboys game, December 24th, was the only time this entire season that we saw the Eagles against a top six caliber team.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, all these games are conditional, but like, let's say they played an AFC West schedule. What would their record be right now? Would they have been 14-3? Would we be as high on them coming into this game as we were? And would we be as high on them if they had to play the Bills or the Dolphins or another one of these teams in order to get to the 49ers game? I don't know. That's a hard thing to answer. And while people can argue that the 49ers haven't really seen anybody of the quality of the Eagles at this point, I would also argue the inverse. And I think they can probably stress test the Eagles better than any team that they've seen outside of Dallas that one week.
The things that kind of stick out to me here is we did see these teams play early last season, and you kind of have to throw it out because Jalen Hurts has just progressed so far. He's progressed so far since like January 2022 and that sort of meltdown in the Bucs game. He's kind of a different quarterback at this point, but D'Amico Ryans mixed his coverages and blitzes in a way that I think really threw Hurts off a little bit. And I wonder what they're going to do here because the 49ers are kind of uniquely equipped to defend any team. Between Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw at the second level, Nick Bosa as a pass rushing presence. I mean, there's no one they're a bad matchup against. But I do feel like this is going to be something much, much different for Jalen Hurts than he's seen at any point this season. Like, drastically different. Not just like, okay, well, here's a good team with good players, but they are going to be able to take things away that I don't think have really been taken away from him, except for maybe when the Cowboys really mixed stuff up in the second half of the first matchup this year. That was a Cooper Rush game, and the Eagles ended up holding on. The other thing that sticks out a little bit is I don't think Brock Purdy played very well last week or the week before.
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to be it? Is this going to be the game where he has to make a couple of throws, have to have it throws, and they're just not there, and this thing falls apart? But, certainly the Eagles have had their ups and downs as a run defense this year. We know what the 49ers can do to teams. We saw what they did in the second half after they sort of got a better grasp on what Dan Quinn was doing with some of the pre-snap looks. I don't know. What do you think? Like a 2-0 game? I don't know. No one's going to score.
Here's what I... I went back and I thought one of my favorite parts of... So I went into that game. I really wanted to see... For the first half, I watched Dexter Lawrence almost exclusively, because I thought, here's what the Giants are going to probably try to do. They want to hit Jalen Hurts. They want to get him on the ground. But the Giants can't really do it in a way that other teams can do it, right? The Giants have to collapse the pocket from the inside. Mm-hmm. And all they did with Jalen Hurts, I mean, I thought it was brilliant, right? Anytime Dexter Lawrence was on the field, it was quick game. It was just quick game, quick game, quick game. And it was, okay, let's get the ball to Devonta Smith. A.J. Brown's going to block out ahead of him. 6 yards, 6 yards, 6 yards, touchdown. They only had that one, if I'm remembering correctly, I think there was the one 40-yarder to Devonta Smith at the beginning of the game. And then I only remember, I have to go back and look at my notes, one really deep drop, like only one, where Hurts had to, you know, it was like a five-stepper. You know, there was a, you know, kind of an elongated route tree going on. Where guys could get at him. And I remember Wink Martindale did run like a free runner at him and almost got him on the ground. But otherwise, the game plan was basically built around, like, you're not touching this guy. We're not going to uncork it and throw him deep. So I don't know if to me that indicates, like, okay, maybe he's still a little banged up or whatever it is. But if that's the case going into Sunday, you know, I would worry a little bit more about Nick Bosa, who's just going to, I mean, can just demolish the pocket in half the time with half the efficiency and or half the effort that it would take someone like Dexter Lawrence to do. So I don't know. Yeah. And yes, Jalen Hurts, it was a good stat by ESPN Stats and Info, did 6 design runs in the first half of that of the Giants game, which was the most, second most I think he's ever done in a game. But if you look at those runs, they were all like these trap runs where what they were doing was they were kind of like inviting Dexter and kind of a bunch of the Giants' best offensive linemen in one direction and then down blocking them. So there wasn't a lot of guys. I mean, they were basically like, okay, we'll take Jalen Hurts' chances with Jalen Smith, like a veteran Jalen Smith. We're not really that worried about that. So they kept him away from, I think, some of the guys who could cause a genuine issue, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and look, the 49ers are, again, just uniquely good at the second level, specifically Fred Warner. I don't really know who you necessarily isolate and attack in that defense because they're all really good. The secondary is maybe not great, but you know, you also have to deal with Nick Bosa. So let's go to the AFC here. We talked a little bit about Patrick Mahomes and the ankle issue on the Monday morning show. It's going to be a thing. And I wonder how much easier is the word I'll throw out, though that's not exactly the best word in the world here. But how much easier it's going to be for the Bengals to prepare for this when you're not, like the Jaguars were, kind of adjusting on the fly and doing it with a young defense at that point. The Bengals know that Patrick Mahomes is going to have limited mobility, and certainly they're a team that it's a veteran defense. They have basically been able to take drastically different approaches in different times of within a game, and it just seems like this is a really good matchup here for Bengals defense versus Chiefs offense.
It's a really good matchup. I mean, you're just not going to be able to. And I mean, the one good thing about having Andy Reid as a head coach is he's successfully in the past run a very quick strike West Coast-y offense. He has the receivers to do it. He has the quarterback to do it. But it's just not what the Chiefs have done in the past historically. And so because you cannot put Patrick Mahomes in a situation where you put him in last year where he's going to try to freelance enough to get guys open. And then by then you have, you know, Sam Hubbard and Trey Hendrickson just sitting on him, you know? And so that's not a possibility. This is going to be a three and out, three steps. I mean, and out. And I don't know how good they are at doing that. Cause I think the Bengals are really good. I mean, they're going to cover people. They're really fast. And they have cornerbacks who get after the ball and who can jump those short passes.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen for the most part these teams have played high-scoring games, except for really that AFC title game last year when, again, Lou Anarumo went just super coverage-heavy in the second half, dropping 7, dropping 8 in a lot of cases, and Patrick Mahomes just did not react to it well. Man, I don't know. It's just whatever. Andy Reid gets paid a lot of money to figure these things out, and they're going to have to figure something out here against the Bengals with a very limited guy under center who's usually literally capable of doing anything you could imagine him doing. You know, we've certainly talked quite a bit about Joe Burrow on the show over the last 2 years. The Chiefs defense, and this has been the case seemingly each of the last like 4 or 5 years, they've gotten better as the year has gone on. They don't match up particularly well, though, and no one matched up that well with the Bengals' weapons here. And again, this is a Bengals' offense that just it's an old school Tom Brady type offense. It's, you know, read the mail before the snap. Let's get out in our spread look, and Joe Burrow will figure out pre-snap, and if he's wrong, he'll extend the play and get it done post-snap.
Yeah, and it's like the best vintage Patriots offenses, right? It's just so, it can be so brutal, it can be so punishing, and Chris Jones is going to help. I mean, he's going to be the X factor in this game. Maybe a little George Karlaftis, Gary, but yeah. I mean, it's up to them, right? They're going to have to stop the run. They're going to have to beat up on Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. But it's just, there's too much offense and there's too much defense in Cincinnati for me. Like, I just think, sure, is there 5 out of 10 chances that the Chiefs win this game? I don't know. I would say 3 in every 10 times they would play in these particular circumstances, I would pick the Chiefs. Do you think that's fair?
Yes, I think that's fair.
3 out of every 10? Yeah. So sure. Because we're Nate Silver hedging right now, right? I love that. It was before the I think it was before the 2016 election when, I mean, this is not a political statement, but I think that there was a large portion of America that was somewhat terrified of everything that was going on. And I just loved, if you went to his website, he's like the editor, the chief political predictor guy for 538 and ABC. And, you know, there was like a graphic that was just like, Trump has about a field goal kick percent chance of winning. Or what was it? Like, the chances of Trump winning are about the chances of, like, whatever. Give me a good kick, like Robbie Gould missing a 45-yard field goal. And I was like, oh God, like that's, you know, that could happen. And again, this isn't a political statement. I'm just saying, like, it was funny that election seemed to be of such consequence. And then they compared it to like the chances of an NFL kicker missing a field goal. It's like, it's sort of like the doomsday clock, right? It's like, okay, yes, we're all going to die and burn up if this little hand ticks closer to midnight. It's that kind of thing, you know. But
yeah,
in this sense, it's the sports. It's just sports. We're doing a coin flip, but just for sports.
It is. But imagine Robbie Gould was on your fantasy team. Then it has that gravity to it.
That's true. Now we're talking. That affects me.
So I have to ask you, Connor. What's the one game you were wrong in your playoff predictions this year? Because our friend and colleague, Mitch Golich, informed us on the group text that you have only gotten one wrong here this postseason.
I have only gotten one wrong. And you know what it was?
I haven't looked at your picks because I barely even look at my picks. But I would say you had Chargers over Jaguars.
Nope. I had Jags.
You had, I don't think you, I mean, I would say it would be on brand to, like, do Giants over Eagles last week, but I don't think you did that.
Mm-mm. You know what it was? It was a little bit of an aftershock blowback from picking against Tom Brady in 2020. I picked the Bucks over the Cowboys.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because, you know what was too, and, you know, people need to realize, I wanted a 49ers-Bengals Super Bowl. That's what I've wanted since the beginning. In order to make that happen, it's much easier for me if I knock the Cowboys out in the first round and just lean on, oh, it's Tom Brady, and then nobody questions it, and it's a very easy sort of maneuver. So that's what I did. And that was the only one I got wrong, and it was a good – it ended up working out because it's not of consequence, right? We still have our final four. Everybody's here. And, you know, I'm probably going to win the pool this year, I would have to imagine. No prizes, but, you know.
I was going to say, no prizes, and, like, 3 of the 5 pickers weren't paying attention all year. But still very nice. So who did you pick for this weekend?
I have the Bengals and the 49ers. That's what I want, and that's what I'm hoping for.
Okay. I have the Bengals and the Eagles, so we'll see how it goes here.
Both of those would be great Super Bowls. I think Bengals-Eagles stylistically might be slightly more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I don't know. Brock Purdy in the Super Bowl? That'd be pretty cool. Be pretty neat.
It would be pretty neat.
Pretty cool.
Oh, man.
What a terrible way to end that.
Edit it out. Edit it out, Shelby.
Don't edit it out.
The MMQB NFL podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Granling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts. And once you do, please leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. We'll be right back.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.